Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hello, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and today we're going to be talking about a condition that can cause some significant damages with Jason Atienza, who is a physician, also has his MBA, and is joining me today as the guest of my show. Jason works in the Orlando area as a rehabilitation physician, and his focus is catastrophic conditions, including severe stroke, spinal cord injury, brain injury, and multiple trauma. Certainly, if you've worked on personal injury and some medical malpractice cases, you've seen instances of those types of injuries, and you may have taken care of patients clinically as a nurse with people who have suffered from those conditions. Jason has a focus not only on rehabilitation, but also hosts a podcast called MedPro Money, which covers business, finance, and investing education for healthcare professionals. Jason, welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you could be with us today.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Can you tell us about the types of patients who receive care at your facility? And I should mention that you are the medical director at Orlando Health.
Yes. So as you mentioned, I am a rehabilitation physician, physical medicine rehabilitation. I've been doing it for about 15 years. And since graduating residency, my patient population has always been like you mentioned, catastrophic conditions, patients with catastrophic conditions like stroke, spinal cord injury, traumatic brain injury, especially working at a level one trauma center, we see a lot of these patients. Stroke is probably the number one, well, it is the number one diagnosis that we see because it's so common. And in the inpatient rehabilitation unit, these patients have generally gone to the emergency room, they've gone to the acute medical unit, they've been stabilized medically for the most part, and then they come to us for a short course aggressive therapy program in order to get back home and to try to get back to as much of their normal lives as they can.
Can you take us through just a little bit of the physiology in terms of what causes stroke?
Sure. So the two major pathologies that we see is there's the stroke where there is little or no blood flow to a part of the brain, and then there's a stroke where there is too much blood flow and actual bleeding into the brain. So the first one where there's little or no blood flow, that's called an infarct, cerebrovascular accident, CVA for short. And then the other one is with a bleed, it's called a hemorrhagic CVA. And so it's important to determine which one you're dealing with immediately because the treatment course for these are very different. So those are the two different types of pathologies we'll see.
Okay. And from a medical legal perspective, I know that attorneys and legal nurse consultants could be involved in cases where a stroke resulted from trauma or a stroke resulted from the clot that ruptures or from the infarct. It becomes a medical legal case depending upon what caused those symptoms, but it also could be a case that flows from the immediate treatment of the people who are exhibiting signs of a stroke. What are the signs that would warrant immediate treatment?
Sure. So the most common signs that are generally known are if someone has sudden weakness or numbness or tingling on generally one side of the body, maybe numbness, tingling, or drooping on one side of the face. maybe even the opposite side of the body that's having the effects. Sudden difficulty with language, difficulty with memory, or maybe even a bowel or bladder abnormality, sudden incontinence. Those tend to be the most common symptoms that I think most people that have heard about stroke are pretty familiar with. What's important to know is that really two things. There's the timing that's involved when it comes to stroke. If symptoms like this occur for less than 24 hours and then completely resolve, then it's not considered a stroke. It's considered a transient ischemic attack, TIA. You may have heard that. Your listeners may have. The other thing to consider is that for stroke patients, those are the most common symptoms, but sometimes it could be as subtle as all of a sudden someone has a weird change in their ability to tie their shoes, like they're a little bit clumsier on the one of their hands, or a sudden slip of their speech that maybe only that person or someone who really knows them really well will notice, while someone else who doesn't know them as well won't. So there, and it could be as extreme as someone who falls unconscious all of a sudden, and could be due to several things, whether it's cardiac or neurologic, but a stroke can certainly cause that. So what's important to know is that if there's any type of neurologic change, I think the point is that any neurologic change, there's a potential and it needs to be addressed.
So you could have a situation of a person who's living alone, for example, and experiences these symptoms, and there's no one around to intervene on that person's behalf.
That's absolutely right. And there have been some patients who still are able to get on the phone and call somebody, and then the person on the other line will just, the history is that, well, you know, my mom called and she just didn't quite sound right, and then I had to go there and check her out and see what was going on. So yes, it is. That's probably one of the biggest concerns, especially when someone has risk factors for stroke and they're living alone and maybe not following up with their primary care physician and following up on their blood pressure and their blood sugars if they're diabetic. So,
in the legal world and in the medical world, we talked about the window of opportunity. The amount of time that you have from the beginning onsets of the symptoms to the point where there's irreversible damage. What type of window of opportunity are we talking about with somebody who's experiencing those symptoms?
Sure. So there have been numerous studies that have shown that for the infarct type of stroke, that the first one we talked about, treatment with aggressive anticoagulation can, and that's done in the emergency room, can show some benefits in the long-term functional level of patients, even 3, 6, you know, 9 months down the road. So the window of opportunity, which is crucial, is that type of treatment, which is generally overseen by a neurologist, usually in the emergency room, that type of treatment has to be done within 3 hours of the first signs. So if someone brought a family member in, one of the first questions would be, oh, you noticed these symptoms, when did you notice? You know, try to give us as close to the minute as you can. That way the clinicians know exactly what they're working with. So when you think about that 3-hour window, it means that the person or their family needs to recognize the potential of a stroke, get them to care, whether through EMS or taking them to the hospital themselves, get them there, get them through the process, get them admitted to the ER, have a physician see them, and have a neurologist come in and see them. They have to have a CT done to determine what kind of stroke they're dealing with. Usually have to get some lab work and also definitely get a complete history and physical exam. And after all that, ideally it's all done within 3 hours. So that, as you can see, that could be very, very tight, but that's, mm-hmm. that's the time frame we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the misdiagnosis of somebody who is experiencing signs of a stroke. What could be confused with those symptoms?
Sure. So there's a whole host of neurologic conditions that could mimic this. Now there's infectious processes. There's cardiac process. For example, someone who has atrial fibrillation, for example, and they all of a sudden have a fainting episode, or AKA a syncopal episode. And they may have a unconscious episode, but they're neurologically intact. So that's possible. There could also be symptoms that come about more gradually. Maybe someone who's had a cancer history and has maybe developed a metastatic lesion, and that's and unfortunately, the first time that's noted and diagnosed is when either stroke-like symptoms happen, or someone has a seizure. So there's a whole host of neurologic conditions that could mimic it. So that the initial evaluation, the history and the physical, followed by imaging is critical to try to separate these diagnoses out.
You know, you've talked about the critical nature of the timing of treatment starting within 3 hours. What should a legal nurse consultant who's working on a case involving a stroke patient be evaluating in the emergency room record or in the medical record itself regarding that treatment?
Sure. So the first thing would be to note the time of the initial evaluation, and also note there should be a very, very comprehensive history and physical right there by the emergency room team, followed by just as comprehensive, if not more comprehensive, consultation by a neurologist. That would be the ideal situation. That's what you would expect, actually. That's a standard of care. So looking at the history and physical, looking at the history part, a clear documentation of has anyone stated when the symptoms most likely started? Was that noted? And what exactly those symptoms were, and have they got worse? Were they sudden, or has this been going on for a while, and now the person's just getting medical care now? The timing is very important, as we've talked about. And then going to the physical exam part, definitely looking at the vital signs and the blood pressure upon admission, and looking at the neurologic exam, the cardiac exam, and noting what as much of a exam as they could get, or what kind of motor and sensory deficits they're noticing. From the initial documentation, you generally will have the at least the beginnings of an evaluation of the imaging, either the official report or at least what we call a wet read, or someone's review of the image before the full report is out, of what that clinician thinks they're seeing. And so those are the things you would look for in the from the initial documentation.
You know, I think of how when I worked in a labor and delivery unit, I heard the concept that an obstetrician had to live within a certain number of minutes from the hospital. And I think that's true of anesthesiologists as well. What I'm thinking mm-hmm. about as you're talking about the timing of this is that having a neurologist available pretty much 24 hours a day sounds like a mandate for being able to fit within this window of opportunity. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes, absolutely. That is one of the most critical services that's needed. Some hospitals will have neurologists on staff specifically as part of the, it would be called a stroke team or something like that. Or maybe a different name, but specifically for that, whereas the other types of neurologic conditions generally can be taken care of in the neurologist's office as an outpatient, this is really one of the only ones that they really have to have someone on staff. So yes, a 24/7 coverage.
Once that diagnosis is made, then what medications are appropriate? And could you break that down for us for the hemorrhagic versus the ischemic strokes?
Sure. So for the ischemic strokes, the treatments tend to be twofold. It tends to be some type of either anticoagulation or platelet-limiting medication. Either we're talking an aspirin or Plavix or some anticoagulation. Some patients are put on Eliquis, things like that. And the idea, and that's one part. And then the second part is some type of a lipid-lowering agent, atorvastatin, for example, Lipitor. For the hemorrhagic, the number one treatment tends to focus on blood pressure management because that will intensify or worsen the condition if the blood pressure is not controlled. So for a hemorrhagic stroke patient, you'll tend to see a much more aggressive blood pressure management, whereas for infarct stroke, the neurologists often recommend some type of what we call permissive hypertension, slightly elevated blood pressure, slightly elevated, so that the idea being that with that extra pressure will allow a little extra perfusion. And that's for a temporary time frame, but allow extra perfusion for that part of the brain that's not getting the blood supply it needs. But that's usually recommended by a neurologist.
Mm-hmm.
Falls are a frequent source of injury and one of the most common reasons for a lawsuit against a healthcare provider. There are common reasons for lawsuits. Whether they occur in the community or within a healthcare facility, legal nurse consultants are essential for helping attorneys to understand the medical issues. I put together a 6-hour course that ramps up your knowledge about falls to help make you better prepared to assist your clients. The course is called Falls, the Impact of Head Injury. What can this 6-hour-long course do for you? You'll learn and retain more in the course than you can imagine. Gain insights and practical tools about how to analyze a head trauma case. You'll gain skill in reviewing the facts of a fall case and learn from expert witnesses who have reviewed hundreds of cases. You'll learn skills and techniques you can use immediately. The course is not full of dry theory. It's fast-paced and comprehensive to give you practical and useful information. You can review the course over and over. Not only will you be filled with useful information at the end of every session, when you purchase the course, you'll be able to watch the replays and review the transcripts whenever you want. And you can also earn 8 contact hours. The option of nursing contact hours for relicensure or recertification can be obtained for a nominal fee of $15. Enjoy the convenience of virtual learning from the comfort of your home or office. What you get when you purchase the full course is 4 online training sessions of directly applicable content from our expert presenters, transcripts of each session so you can review the content whenever you like, a PDF of each presenter's slides, digital recordings of the sessions, access to a password-protected website to collect your course materials, opportunity to earn 8 contact hours at a nominal cost of $15, and you can order this course at http://lnc.tips/falls course. That's all one word. http://lnc.tips/falls course. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount. Now we return to the show.
I'm sure that everyone on the call has seen people who've had strokes who've had right-sided weakness or left-sided weakness or lost their ability to speak. Is that the outcome that is common today?
You know, the most common symptoms, usually there's usually some type of residual deficit. And the stroke population is quite variable in what that residual deficit is. Fortunately, a lot of patients have very, very minimal residual deficits. So I'd say commonly, that's a little hard to say common, what's most common, but usually it's either some weakness or some dysarthria or the slurred speech or some memory issue or a combination thereof.
I know that when you and I talked a couple weeks ago, I was describing a physician that I know who had an aneurysm that ruptured in her brain, and she had a complete recovery without any noticeable deficit in her thought processes, in her motor skills, in her sensory skills. I was amazed at how total her recovery could be. Can you kind of give us the overall of what percentage of the patients that you take care of who are able to escape any type of a permanent impairment?
In the time I've worked with these patients, I'd say definitely, I'd say less than 10% will come out with zero residual deficits. Part of that has to do with, of course, the severity of the stroke and even more importantly, the location in the brain, which part is affected. If you could see the image for trained clinicians who see the image, you can just say where it is, and you pretty much know what the symptoms or what the residual effects are going to be. So one person who had an aneurysm bleed on one area could very well have a much better outcome than someone with a same size bleed but in a different area.
Interesting. So if you have to go through this, location is really important.
Absolutely.
Are there any other factors that affect the outcome other than the location of the bleed?
The overall outcome in regards to functional, I always think functionally as a rehabilitation doc. So there have been reviews and studies on the importance of aggressive rehabilitation, especially early on, especially in the first month, and that have shown long-term benefits. This is the reason why acute inpatient rehabilitation exists and why stroke is the number one diagnosis that inpatient rehab programs tend to see, is because of that potential for functional improvement. Especially for the more severe stroke patients, to have the coordinated program of physical, occupational therapy and speech therapy, as well as neuropsychology and recreational therapy and rehabilitation specific nursing. When you have all those in place, then you have a really coordinated aggressive program. And these are the patients that I have seen have done quite well. So
it sounds like a very good approach.
Yes, and at the very least, if someone for whatever reason cannot get into a program like that, and there's many reasons, unfortunately, there's many reasons, at least to try to get some type of either home health or outpatient program in those therapy disciplines would still be beneficial.
After somebody completes the inpatient rehab program that you're describing, is there typically follow-up home health or outpatient therapy?
Yes. So inpatient rehab is a short-term program. The national average for length of stay in inpatient rehab is approximately about 14 days, more or less. And so that is about the amount of time to get someone aggressively rehabilitated, train family, get the appropriate medical equipment, and get everything set up so the patient can safely, the number one goal is that the patient can safely get home and safely function, whether it's independently or with family or caregiver support. So most patients will continue their rehabilitation program even after they've finished their inpatient program.
It sounds like a lot of activity and a lot of
Yes.
hours of treatment to go through.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And our patients, a lot of them will say, "Oh, I'm wiped out, but this is great. You know, I know it's the right thing to do." So, and the families tend to agree.
Well, I know that I've taken care of people who've had strokes who have said to me, "Do I really have to get out of bed today? I'm so tired. Couldn't you just leave me in bed and let me sleep?"
Yeah. Some of our therapists are, how shall I say, more, I don't know, forward than others. A lot of our therapists do the tough love approach. And for some patients, definitely need that. And the approach is, hey, you know what? Use it or lose it, kind of thing. So if you don't get up, then you're going to think about what's going to happen down the road. If you don't get up today, then you'll be even weaker tomorrow, and then you won't get up then, and then you're not going to get better unless you work on things and improve your strength and your mobility and your daily activities. And if you stay in bed, then we start to worry about things like pressure wounds and malnutrition and a whole host of other bad, issues that we don't want to be dealing with. So it's better to just get up and let's do our thing. So let's start by getting you at the edge of the bed. And then by taking that approach, our patients get up and they start moving. They may not like it in the beginning, but they always, I'd say 99% will tell us by the end, hey, you know what, you all pushed me, but this was absolutely the right thing. Look at this. I'm actually walking with a walker. I'm actually upright and walking with a walker. So that's those are good results.
I can tell you've given that speech before, Jason.
I have many times. But it depends on the patient. Some patients need that approach, and some patients, a little bit more of the TLC approach.
And
But either way, they're going to get up.
well, I think so. They're not going to lay in bed in your facility, it sounds like. And could you, in finishing off this segment, could you share with us a story of a person who made a really good recovery?
Oh yeah, there's we've had so many, and I think I can say one example is a patient that I've had who was it was an elderly patient, a female patient, and she just wanted, we always talk, and it's all about goals in patient rehabilitation. So usually in the first day, in the first and second day, she's asked, what do you want to accomplish? What are your goals? And they get sick of that question because by the end of day two, eight or nine different people have already asked them what their goals are. And so for this one patient, I can clearly remember her. She said, my goal is that I want to go, I just want to go back to, I want to get to church again, because I used to go to church every twice a week, essentially. And I haven't gone in about a month here, and I really want to get to church. So that was our approach, and it was very much, we got to work on your mobility. Well, first of all, we got to work on you getting out of bed. We got to work on, imagine you want a Sunday morning. What do you have to do? You have to get out of bed, then you have to brush your teeth, you have to get dressed, you have to use the bathroom. We got to make sure if you're having any incontinence issues, we got to address that because we don't want you to deal with that in church or anywhere else. And then after, when you're at church, you need to be able to manage being there for extended period of time. And so we got to work on your balance. We got to work on your endurance. And she says, well, afterwards we generally have a meal, and I'm there with all my friends, and they've missed me, and I miss them. And well, we got to make sure your eating is good. So this whole process, we always start off with the goals. We always we always start off thinking about the discharge plan on day one, so that everybody is prepared and there's no surprises at the end. And this patient, she did very well, and she came and visited us once, and she actually said she came by after church, and she was just happy that she could go back to church. So every patient has their own goals. Being here in a metro area, we've had some patients who were professional athletes, and so of course their goals were different. But every patient has their goals, and our purpose is to educate them and to maximize their function to the best that we can, and to help them through this process.
I appreciate the expertise that you've shared with us today, Jason. How would our listeners be able to find out more about you?
Sure. So I, as you mentioned earlier, I have a podcast called MedPro Money, and that's, you know, this is more of a side interest for me. My primary interest being in rehabilitation, but I also got my MBA because I feel that it's very important for medical professionals to learn about the business side of things, the financial side of things, especially to understand decisions that are being made either at work or if they decide to go into a business, or nurses I've met that will be interested in things like what you're an expert in the legal nurse consulting. So I developed this podcast called MedPro Money, and it's available on iTunes and Google Play. And there's also, I have a very simple static website called medpromoney.com, which serves as the launchpad for the podcast. So that's a good way to learn about what I do and some interesting interviews that I've had with some great speakers, like Pat. That was very kind of you to do that a couple weeks back, and that's available on iTunes. And so for any of your listeners that are interested in that, can take a listen.
Well, thank you so much. And this has been Pat Iyer with Jason Atienza talking about stroke rehabilitation issues and the prognosis, which has steadily improved over the years with earlier recognition of stroke and more effective treatment. Thank you so much for spending your time with us, Jason. It's been great to be updated on this area of medicine.
Sure thing, Pat. Thanks a lot.
And for our listeners, thanks for being with us today. We will be back next week with a new interview. If you love to read, be sure that you sign up for the transcripts of our show, which are available on our website, so that you can review this material and go back to it. Or for some people who'd rather read than listen, we made that option available for you. Have a great, safe week, and we'll be with you next week. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.